This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. Ira Flatow will be back next week. Way back in the 19th century, Charles Darwin observed that domesticated animals had some behaviors and even physical attributes that made them different from their untamed relations. Take, for example, the floppy ears of your family dog. But now consider your cat. Have you ever wondered how domestic that sometimes friendly feline really is? No, house cats still make very good hunters. They're independent, and a new study in PNAS finds that when it comes to genetics, they've got a lot in common with their wild or maybe their wilder counterparts. Joining us is one of the authors of that study. Wes Warren is Associate Professor of Genetics at the Washington University School of Medicine and the Genome Institute. He joins us today from St. Louis. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
And we couldn't talk about cats without mentioning rats, could we? Well, a new study finds that many genetic differences are there between rats that are docile and the ones that are throw themselves at the cage aggressive. Joining us this hour is one of the authors of that study. Alex Kagan is a PhD candidate at the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, nice to be here.
So you can give us a call. We'd like to know how wild is your house cat? How tame is your pet rat? Our phone number is 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. If you're on Twitter, tweet us at SciFry. You can always leave a comment at sciencefriday.com, where you will find links to our topic today. So first of all, Wes, we'll start with cats. I'm a big cat person, so I'm very interested in this. Why study the cat genome?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for our study of the cat genome. We broke our study down into three narratives. The first is we wanted to compare a group of carnivores, which included the dog, the tiger, and the cat, to humans, ourselves. And the second narrative is we wanted to study how the domestic cat arose from its wild ancestors. And then the third narrative was we wanted to examine how breeds were formed. So if a breeder was interested in a particular hair pattern, how did that become to be in terms of the breed or the formation of that breed? So those were the three narratives we focused on in this study. And of course, there's many other reasons, primarily the reason of looking at diseases that are inherited in cats and helping veterinarians to diagnose those diseases more quickly.
Now, I know people have been hanging out with dogs for a long, long time. When did people start using cats as domestic animals?
Yeah, our best evidence, and it's very scant evidence, is They started to cohabitate with humans about 9,000 years ago, and that's based on archaeological evidence from the island of Cyprus. And then there's also a recent study showing archaeological remains in China, and that was dated about 5,000 years ago. So as you noted, it's much less time of domestication for the cat versus the dog.
And people were trying to select cats that they'd want to, hang around with, but that would also do something for them, right?
Correct. So we think the main focus on selection or tameness or docility started to occur around 9,000 years ago. And we don't have exact dates, of course. And the reason was that was a period of time where agriculture was really booming and a lot of the domestication events, including cattle and pigs, et cetera, started to happen around that time. And as farmers were collecting grains, of course, that drew in rodents to eat those grains. And then we believe that drew in some of the cat population that was feral in surrounding areas. And the humans welcomed these cats because not only did they control the pests that were eating their grains, but perhaps they also recognized that these rodents were bringing diseases. So it's possible that they were trying to entice these cats to stick around and provide them with food rewards. So that's where you start to see the first selection on what we call tameness.
So genetically speaking, what makes a house cat similar to a wild cat? Are they actually pretty close?
Yes, the wild cat and the house cats are actually very close. In fact, if you were to see a wild cat running around in a rural area and then a tabby patterned cat that was domestic running around in that certain area, you really could not distinguish them visually. So at the genetic level, of course, we can see many differences, and that's what the study was really focused on, to try to find those regions in the genome of the domestic cat that's really changing faster than we expect by chance.
And that's in comparison to say, dogs, where there's a more genetic difference between, say, my pooch at home and a wolf.
Right. And the dogs had about a 30,000-year time frame of domestication. And they were, as you know, selected for many more traits. And there's a lot of diversity in dog breeds, whereas you look at the breeds of cat, and there's not a lot of diversity other than hair coat patterns and pigmentation patterns.
Is domesticated really the right word for the pet cat? I mean, is that really what we're dealing with, or is it tameness? I mean, what exactly is the term we should really be using here?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's something that's debated frequently by scientists, because domestication is a very loose term, and it's not always defined the correct way. In the case of the cat, we argue that the cat is what we call semi-domesticated, meaning that your cat, if you were to release your cat into the wild, your cat could go right back to hunting and surviving in the wild, whereas many of the dog breeds that have been intensely selected for certain traits would have a very difficult time surviving in the wild if they were released.
We're talking with Wes Warren. He's an associate professor of genetics at the Washington University School of Medicine and the Genome Institute. He joins us from St. Louis today. We're talking about domesticated cats and his study. If you want to join us, some of your thoughts about how wild your house cat is, 844-724-8255. Also joining us is Alex Kagan, who's been studying rats. So you've been working on this long-term project, breeding tame and aggressive rats, Alex. What were you looking for in this study?
So in this study, as you mentioned, we've been studying this really unique model of kind of domestication and fast forward, where they've taken rats from the wild from the 1970s, and over 60 generations, they've been selecting those rats either to be extremely tame and friendly towards humans or in the other population for high levels of aggression. And we've been looking for what are the genetic differences between these two populations of tame and aggressive rats that explain these behavioral differences to try and help us better understand the process of animal domestication. And so in this study, we've been focusing on differences in gene expression in the brain. So if we compare the gene expression in the tame rats in the brain to the aggressive rats, what differences do we find? Which genes are involved? And maybe that can help us understand the process of domestication and what underlies tameness and tame behavior.
Just so people understand, Alex, when you are talking about an aggressive rat versus a tame rat, maybe you can explain some of the behavior differences, because from what I've read, there's a lot of aggression in these nasty rats.
Absolutely. So the clearest way you can understand the differences is when you walk into a room of the tame rats compared to the aggressive rats in their cages. And when you walk into a room with tame rats, they come right up to the cages, sniffing around with their whiskers, trying to get closer to you. They really relish human contact. But then when you walk into a room full of the aggressive rats, they jump right to the back of their cages. They're kind of standing on two legs in a very defensive pose. And if you try and get closer, they will try and lash out and bite you. So it's a completely different response to humans.
So what do you know right now about the genetic differences between the tame and the aggressive?
Right, so we know so far that there are a lot of differences. It seems, as you might expect for a behavior, it's a very complicated trait, and we find many different regions across the genome that are contributing to these differences in behavior. So it's not a simple case of one domestication gene, but several different genes that are contributing to these differences.
We want to get some phone calls, people calling about their domestic animals. Lori is from Winlock, Washington. Hi there, Lori. You're on Science Friday.
Hey, I'm so glad to get to talk to you, Ira. I love your show.
Well, Ira will be back next week, but you can talk to me. What's on your mind?
Sorry. I'm sorry. I forgot somebody else was doing it.
That's okay.
Anyway, I'm glad to talk to you. So I have a cat who's a tortoise shell, and I always hear that torties are extra kind of persnickety and independent, and she definitely is. And she's a house cat. She stays in the house most of the time, but there are feral cats outside. The feral cats outside are friendlier than her. They won't come up, they won't let anybody touch them, but they'll come up pretty close, within a few feet, and just sit and be calm, I think because they're hungry, and the neighborhood, we kind of take turns feeding them. There's a cat with three kittens, so, and they're going to get spayed pretty soon. But anyway, my house cat, the tortoise shell, she'll let me do anything with her.
Yeah.
I can use her. I can cut her toenails. I can file her toenails. I can poke around and look in her ears and her mouth.
Sure.
But when anybody else comes in the house, or if they even walk by the window, she hisses at them.
Well, first of all, Lori, thank you very much for your phone call. And Wes, there's a lot in there. I mean, one of the things has to do with, you know, sometimes feral cats can be just as friendly as house cats. But she also brings up this idea of different breeds, and people who know cats think, well, this breed versus this breed, they have very different temperaments. What can you tell us about cat breeds?
Yeah, in general, as the caller said, there's a lot of variation in temperament across breeds. And some breeds are known to be more docile than other breeds. And if you think back to the domestication events, that's probably what happened. I mean, you had truly wildcat populations, and some portion of that variation was very docile, or that population. And so humans selected on that particular population of cats. Now, you can release cats, domesticated cats that stay in-house all the time, and then they become what we call feral domestics. And that is essentially just having them adapt to their environment and go back to their hunting skills. And remember, there's a lot of interbreeding that still occurs between domestic cats and truly wild cats that have not come into contact with humans.
And it's
so
it, yeah.
There's still a lot of keen hunting behaviors that are and temperaments that are circulating in those populations.
But it's also not surprising to you that mostly feral cats can come up and sit in your lap just like a normal house cat.
That's right.
If you want to join us, 844-724-8255. Quickly, let's get a call here from Patty, who's in Toledo. Hi, Patty.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. My question is this. There are a lot of feral stray cats in the neighborhood, and one of the mothers did not want to feed its kitten, and it was crying outside my window, so I took it in. This kitten could barely see, could barely walk, yet the two male cats that I had inside my house that it hissed at, this kitten went after those male cats and ignored the females that were not aggressive at all. I've had the cat for about a year and a half, and it continues to be very aggressive. It's gotten better because it's adjusted to our social environment, which was peaceful before it came. But what is it?
Well, you know what we're going to try to do? We'll try to get an answer for you about what's happening with this kitten when we come back from a break. We're talking with Wes Warren. He's an associate professor of genetics, and he studies domestic and feral cats. Alex Kagan's a PhD candidate at the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig. We'll be talking more about domestic rats as well. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking this hour about the genetics of tame animals, maybe not so tame. My guests are Wes Warren, associate professor of genetics at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Alex Kagan is a PhD candidate at the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany. We've been talking about tame rats and tame cats, and we had a caller before who was asking about individual cat behaviors. Wes, I'm not sure how much we can tell her about the kitten that was angry at other kittens, but obviously it seems as though a lot of the behaviors that we're hearing about have something to do with the fact that our domestic house cats really do have quite a streak of wild in them still, right?
Yes, they have a streak of wild in them. What's fascinating is when we compared at the molecular level differences between the true wild cats and the domestic cats, we come up with very few regions in the genome that are differentiating faster than we expect by chance. And when we look at those genes, most of those genes are involved in neuronal processes, which makes sense to us. But as Alex was saying, the behavior is very complex, and we expect this is just the tip of the iceberg, and there's much more that we need to discover. And in terms of answering the question about the behavior of that cat that the caller noted that was aggressive to some cats in the household and not others, there is not a really good answer for that. Behavior, as Alex said, is very complex and difficult to dissect at the molecular level.
So, Alex, you were talking about these very tame and very aggressive rats. What happens when you breed an aggressive rat and a tame rat together?
Right, so that's actually one of the important parts of our study, and that's what we actually did to try and map these traits and find out which regions of the genome are involved in these behaviors. So when you breed a tame and an aggressive rat together, their offspring are neither extremely tame nor extremely aggressive because they've got half their genome from a tame rat and an aggressive rat. But then once you get to the next generation, the second generation of breeding them together, you get a whole spectrum of behaviors. So you'll get some offspring, some baby rats that are extremely tame, some that are extremely aggressive, and every combination in between. You get a whole spectrum.
Is there a gene for tameness, Alex?
So that's a great question, and that's what motivates a lot of this work on domestication. And so far, the answer from several studies appears to be no. There's not one single gene, but there's several different genes involved in several different biological pathways, genes that are involved in the brain to do with hormonal differences, and these together contribute to what we would call tameness or domestication.
Wes, you want to pick up on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We've found a few of these genes, and we suspect as we look at more of these domestication events across many different species that we hope to see some convergence in those pathways that Alex mentioned. and try to, at the molecular level, figure out which pathways at least are being modulated as part of this domestication process.
Now, we've talked a lot about behaviors, but we've also read about how some physical traits in domestic animals present themselves, things like the floppy ears in the dog we mentioned before, or white spots. What more can you tell us about that, Wes?
Yeah, so one of the theories for domestication is if you first select on, say, tameness as your major trait of emphasis, many of these other traits will come along for the ride, for lack of a better word. And some of those traits you mentioned, like the cartilage flopping in the ears and the facial structure and many other morphological changes, appear to be part of this domestication process. So there are some theories out there as to how this happens, where you would modulate certain types of cells during development and that would spread to different tissues so that you would see all these other accompanying traits that would be modulated as a part of domestication. But we're really just starting to dig deeper into these theories, and this molecular evidence that we're producing for the cat and the rat and many of these other domestication events will help us understand what exactly are those processes.
Alex, could you talk a bit about how the work that you're doing with rats was inspired maybe by some studies in Russia on foxes?
Absolutely. So, in fact, it was the same professor in Russia, Dmitry Belyaev, who started this experiment in the rats as well as the foxes. So he had this hypothesis that just by selecting for behavior, for tameness, you could create many of these different morphological changes that Wes was talking about, changes in the timing of development, how long the ears are floppy, and changes in pigmentation. And actually, these experiments in Russia have sort of support this hypothesis, because when you select for tameness, you do see other morphological traits sort of coming along, even though they weren't selected for. And now that our task is to try and study the genetics and understand why is it that when you select for behavior, you see all these other interesting changes that have been seen in other domesticated animals.
Wes, what's next for you with this? What else do you think we're going to learn about the genetics of cats?
Yeah, next up for us in terms of trying to define the domestication process in cats, we've only sequenced a small number of wild cats, and we would like to sequence more of these wild cats as well as more of the domestic breeds. And then we want to dig much deeper in terms of the differences between the modern domestic breeds as well as the wild cats, because we believe we still have not completely resolved the source of all of the modern cats that exist today.
I understand that the cat's genome that you used was named Cinnamon. Is that right?
Correct. That's correct. She was a Abyssinian breed. They have their origins in Egypt, and she was part of a research colony that resided at the University of Missouri.
Wes, be honest with me. Are you a cat person?
I did have cats growing up, but I don't have a cat right now. Ironically, I own a dog.
You own a dog. Maybe getting a little too close to the subject there. I want to thank Wes Warren and Alex Kagan, who joined us from Washington University in St. Louis and the Max Planck Institute in Germany, respectively. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.